What up, cryptids and milfs? I'm your host, Amanda.
And I'm Ella, and you're entering the sovereign country of Scully Nation, where the flashlights are flickery and the blazers are boxy.
This is an X-Files rewatch podcast, where we rewatch the X-Files. That's right. You probably could have guessed. And this is my first time ever watching this dang show.
Doesn't that just make it a watch podcast for you?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So I guess it's a... Okay, you know how we love parentheses.
Yes.
The re is in parentheses.
Ooh.
Yeah? Can we change all of our branding?
We could.
Okay.
Let's do it. But not right now.
Okay.
Because right now we have important things to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I said it was my fourth time watching the show, but now I am. It's okay. My fourth time.
Cool.
And every time I watch this episode, it's like the first time, you know?
I mean, I am looking forward to a future where I've forgotten that this episode happened. So yeah,
all right,
it was fine.
Not to spoil anything.
It was fine. That was way too harsh of a criticism.
It was not that bad.
It
has our favorite guy.
Yes, exactly,
which I'm very excited to talk about him.
Mm-hmm. We got a new guy, everybody.
All right, so this episode that we watched tonight, well, we don't, you know what, we're moving on. It's season 4, episode 3, Teleco.
Which is why, when this photograph came across my desk 3 months ago, I knew the Teleco was more than just a children's story. I knew it was real. I knew he was here.
This episode aired on October 18th, 1996. It was written by Howard Gordon and directed by James Charleston. James Charleston previously directed Avatar, which Howie also wrote.
So
it's a real, it's a real Howie boy.
Wow. So he's just stuck with, it's like he gets stuck with the worst group partner.
Mm-hmm. And I think he directs like two after this. Oh, one of them is a Howie episode.
Okay.
One of them isn't. Okay. But well, he doesn't stick around for long.
Well, we didn't notice the writer when we were watching it, but about halfway through, we turned to each other and said, this has the stench of a Howard Gordon episode.
Sure.
And we, I think, paused to look it up, in fact. And it was. So
We knew.
It's not surprising. It's got all his hallmarks.
You know, you never really notice until, like, obviously when I watched The X-Files before, I was not paying attention to writers at all. Mm-hmm. But there's a pattern.
There is.
There's a pattern.
There's a certain feel to the different writers.
Definitely. All right. So this episode takes place in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, that is, and New York. Short plot synopsis. Mulder and Scully are called in to investigate the unexplained deaths of several African and African-American people whose skin color has turned white as the result of either a rare medical disorder or a bizarre curse.
Nice. That's right, everybody. We're going to get an X-Files episode that deals with race. Our favorite. Because we trust these writers.
It always goes so well every time they do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, wait, are we ready to jump in yet? I feel like last time I went way too fast.
Okay.
And now I'm like insecure about if we're ready to jump into the meat or not.
I think we're ready to jump into the melanin-less meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Good. Let's hop on in.
Let's do it.
Join me. It's May 17th.
I've joined you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
It's only May.
Yeah. It's May 17th, 1996.
Okay.
We're on an airplane. We have the racist pan flute music that they always play when a person of color is on screen.
But more this time.
It's pretty much the entire episode.
It's happened before, but it's also just for anyone that's not white, apparently.
Yeah, it's pretty generic because it happened in Tessa Dos Bichos too, right?
Yeah, and probably in Hell Bunny.
Yeah. Oh, I think so.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of what do I want to say? Wait, I feel like I didn't set that up. The plane is mostly...
I don't think you even said it was a plane, did we?
I think we said we were on an airplane.
Okay, we're on an airplane.
But the reason it's racist is because most of the people on the airplane are black.
Yeah, it's like a flight from Africa.
Yeah, from, I think... Well, we later learned Burkina Faso.
Yes.
It's like a charter plane.
Mm-hmm. So there's anyway. Like more black people in this one like scene than there have been in the entire show.
100%. Yeah. So we're like, oh, something's going on. This isn't a normal episode. They don't normally do this unless it's plot relevant.
Mm-hmm.
We just have default white people on this show. So we see a man sweating and reading a report in French, and he's rubbing his eyes and everything. So he looks like he's, you know, kind of
he's
tired.
A sleepy little guy.
He's a sleepy little guy. He's exhausted. He's overworked. He gets up to go to the bathroom, and we see an evil question mark creature staring at him from a crack of a slightly ajar door.
Red eyes and skin pale as death.
Indeed. Looks pretty spooky. So our cold open man approaches the bathroom door. He enters the open stall, washes his face with some airplane water. But uh-oh. Yeah, first of all, gross. But uh-oh, he hears something above his head, looks up, and gets attacked as he cowers and screams at the bathroom door. Changes from libre to occupé.
So the creature took the time to turn the thing to occupied, huh?
But more importantly, cold open man didn't when he walked in?
Yeah, I guess so.
Strange.
He was hoping that somebody would wander in.
Oh,
you know.
Cold open guy was hoping to join the Mile High Club, you're saying?
Exactly.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay. I like this theory.
Okay.
We'll have to check in on that again.
All right.
Do you think he was hoping that the evil creature would smooch him?
I think he was open to any and all possibilities.
Okay. So maybe he was happy that this happened.
Maybe.
Okay.
But I don't think that the creature asked consent to drain all his melanin and kill him.
That's true. That's kind of messed up.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Well, you know, we're learning an important lesson about consent here.
Sure.
So we pull out of the plane. It's starting to into like the cabin, the main cabin. And we see that it's starting to land in JFK. So the flight attendant is walking around, waking people up and telling them to put their tray tables up and their seat backs in the full upright position. Like the Weird Al song.
Okay.
And they have like, I guess it's like a charter flight. So that's probably why. I was going to comment on the fact that they have those seats that are facing backwards, like trains sometimes have.
Oh, I didn't notice.
And I was like, that's pretty wild. I think they did have those on commercial flights too.
But I'll take your word for it.
That'd suck.
Yeah.
To be on that seat.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the flight attendant is looking for Cold Open Man, but oh my goodness, he is not there.
Uh-oh.
That's not good. But they, I don't know. We like go back into the bathroom, right? And see the scary man.
Yeah, there's the new guy. Mm-hmm. He is no longer pale as death, and he no longer has red eyes, and he looks, you know, pretty normal. Mm-hmm. And he walks out just casual as can be. And then the flight attendant goes into the bathroom, and then she finds poor, tired little business boy, and he is, now he's pale as death and dead.
Uh-oh.
He's so pale as death because he's dead.
Well, yes, but he's also just pale as death because his melanin was sucked out.
Yes.
With a straw.
That's not good.
No. Credits.
I guess it was kind of a straw, huh?
Yeah, kind
of. All right.
Slurp, slurp. Credits over.
Oh.
But before they're over,
yep.
Do you want to say it?
We do get a very exciting little motto, even though it's a Monster of the Week episode. Deceive, inveigle, obfuscate. Whatever that means.
They're really trying to make this happen.
We'll check in on this as we go along, but they were very excited about this one.
Yeah, Howie was like, I learned 3 new words today.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use them.
He definitely had his like word of the day calendar out, and he's like,
Chris, did you know the word inveigle?
Ugh.
Howie, I'm eating dinner with my family.
Exactly.
You can't keep doing this.
Anyway, now the credits are over.
Yes.
We go to FBI HQ. It's dusk or something. It's like late evening.
Oh, I think it's like 5 in the morning.
It's 5 in the morning. It's the opposite of that. It's off hours. It's the important thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Scully gets called into Skinner's office, and he has some doctor from Philadelphia, and he works for the CDC, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
He works for the CDC in Philadelphia, and he greets Scully. He calls her Dr. Scully, so we know that this episode, we're going to need her medical expertise.
Mm-hmm.
So they sit her down and they kind of brief her on the case that this guy is working on. So they ask her what she knows about a series of kidnappings in Philadelphia. And she says that she's read about it in the paper. So 4 men have gone missing in the past couple of months. They've all been African-American, and there haven't really been any leads until last night when they found the most recent victim. He was found near a construction site, but there's no evidence indicating homicide and no cause of death determined. Hmm. So pretty spooky,
that
I guess.
That is pretty spooky.
But maybe not an X-File. Probably just, you know, a murder or something. And so then the doctor, what's his name?
I didn't catch it, so I think I just called him the doctor throughout all my notes.
Sure. He's a
CDC guy.
Yeah, he's a non-entity. Yeah. It's not important.
Dr. CDC?
Dr. CDC. Okay. So Dr. CDC shows Scully the picture of the guy that they found, and he is also pasty white, no color in his skin or hair. So that's strange, because then they kind of compare it to a picture of him in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So weird, but then they're thinking, Dr. CDC thinks that this could be some sort of a symptom of a disease, and maybe it's not like a murder or a crime. It's just a disease.
So why do they need Scully on this? I mean, I guess she's an investigator and a doctor. Is that the only reason? Do they think there's a crime that's been committed?
Well, I mean, they are, like, randomly disappearing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's weird.
It is weird. It's weird, for sure. I'm happy Scully's on the case.
Yeah, of course.
For sure. She does seem, like, confused when they hand her the picture of his, like, corpse that just clearly has white paint drawn on it or whatever.
yes.
And she's like, I thought you said he was black. I was like, I don't know. It was very silly, because he like clearly just looks like he has
white paint.
Albinism, or paint more accurately, on his face. But it's, I don't know. It was very funny.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he like looks Caucasian particularly just because of that. I don't know why she was confused, but it's 5 a.m.
It was in the script.
That's also true. So we go to the FBI pathology lab at 7:25 a.m. So we're getting a little closer to normal working hours, and we are getting us a smorgasbord.
Hell yeah.
So we see this guy with the white paint on his body, and Scully's taking her notes in her little voice recorder thing, and she says there's some bleaching of the retina or something that implies a violent cellular reaction rather than just the victim being albino.
Yes.
Apparently. So Mulder rolls in and he's like, cool, what you working on so early? This looks fun. And
he's also eating sunflower seeds.
Yeah.
In the middle of this autopsy.
Middle of an autopsy at 7:25 in the morning. Yeah, it's all kind of weird.
Sure.
He loves snacking.
That's our guy.
It's true. It's just to show how desensitized he is to the violence around him.
Okay.
You know, it's just a job to him.
All right. Okay.
I guess. So Scully gives Mulder the lowdown. She tells him that the CDC wants her to determine the cause of death. And that's, Mulder's also confused. He's like, why is the CDC involved in a kidnapping case? But they believe that it has been mislabeled and it's actually this pathogen, since there are no signs of trauma. And Scully doesn't really have any idea what the disease could be, but she lists off some possible disorders. And Mulder's like, yeah, that doesn't really make any sense. Because that would mean that, like, 4 random black men or boys, I guess, some of them are teenagers, in Philadelphia just, like, happened to contract a disease, and then...
All within, like, 2 months.
Yeah, but they're the only ones, and then they're never seen from again, and then they, like, died immediately, apparently, from this. It just doesn't seem very likely.
Yeah.
With, like, no sign of what killed them. And Scully's like, well, it's possible that the bodies have turned up, but they were mislabeled or, like, misidentified due to the change in pigmentation. And so she has re-released descriptions to morgues across the state. So, you know, she's on it. She's trying.
She's investigating.
Yeah.
She's morgasboarding it.
Yes, exactly.
But then Mulder's like, well, I don't know, because they always have to disagree. They always have to have, you know, conflicting viewpoints, of course. So Mulder's like, well, I don't know, maybe it's not a disease. Maybe this whole investigation is just a PR exercise designed to distract from the impression that nobody cares about this case because they're black men. And then Scully has a great... Okay, so here's when we drop it.
Yes.
This is an exciting line. So Scully's like, you know, Mulder, not everything is a labyrinth of dark conspiracy, and not everything is an attempt to deceive, inveigle, and obfuscate. And you can see Gillian Anderson struggling with that line.
Yeah. She's like, wow, this is not a thing a human would say,
Howie. No. Maybe the first half of that, but certainly not the second.
I also like that, again, like you say, they just have to disagree. Like, it's the format of the show, so I understand. But it does kind of sound like she's arguing that systemic racism doesn't exist.
It does come off that way.
Which is awkward.
Yeah,
like,
I mean...
She's trying to just be like, you know, not everything is a conspiracy. But
yep.
I don't think it's... I don't know. It's not Mulder's wildest theory.
No. Yeah, and I think they were trying to... Like, she was more trying to be on the side of that it was a disease and not a person. But it did come off a little weird.
Yeah.
It did.
But it is what it is. Again, I feel like all of these things would be less weird if it wasn't that they just have very special episodes where they have all of their characters of color or black characters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But whatever. Mulder continues to eat his sunflower seeds. He looks unimpressed, and he takes the fibers that Scully pulled off the body and goes to investigate those, apparently. So we don't know quite what he's doing, but he's off to explore.
He's on the case.
Yeah. He's part of it. He's wormed his way in. He doesn't have anything better to do.
Absolutely not.
You notice Skinner did not invite him to the office.
No,
I don't know if
no.
he was supposed to be on this case. I guess maybe they just assume that Mulder will, like, follow if Scully's on it.
That's kind of how it happens.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we go instead to a dark, scary apartment. And what do we call this guy? The main...
Well, his
Sucker.
Name is Samuel Aboah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I just called him Aboah in my notes.
He's
like Kubrick staring alone in his apartment.
In his dark apartment, like shirtless on the couch.
Yeah.
That's scary. But someone knocks on his door, and so he gets up and walks to the door.
Yep.
And as he's walking, we see a patch of light skin on his back. So it seems like, you know, he's like slowly becoming more and more melanin deficient.
Yeah.
And I guess he has to suck the melanin out of his victims to maintain his dark skin. I don't know.
We got another squeeze.
Yes. Yep. It's the same thing, basically. Mm-hmm. But then...
Yes.
No, this is the moment. This is our new guy.
This is important.
The guy knocking on the door is the greatest character ever.
I mean, probably.
I love this guy.
Love him.
I don't know how Howie wrote him. I guess it's mostly the actor, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't even know why I like him so much. It's just, it probably is the actor.
Yeah, he's great. He's got a face.
Oh,
he has
it's like carved out of stone.
Yeah, like very severe eyebrows. Yes. Like those lines on the side of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
He just looks so intense.
Yeah, love him.
He's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But like also nice.
Yeah.
But like in an intense way.
Yeah.
His name is Marcus Duff.
Yeah, it is.
So Marcus Duff is knocking on the door. And Aboah answers it. And Marcus introduces himself as Aboah's immigration officer. So he's come to help sign some petitions or something for his application.
Yep.
So Samuel, like, is very weird. And
Doesn't say much.
Doesn't say much. Doesn't seem, I don't know, like, quite human necessarily, like, the way he's acting. But maybe that's just my bias because I've seen him suck melanin out of someone.
Sure. Yep.
But he lets this guy in, and Marcus is like, you know, a charismatic dude who's like, okay, well, you know, let's open the windows, get some light in here. And Aboah thinks about it and then just turns on a lamp instead of opening the windows.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcus is like, all right, cool, that works. Nice.
He's very friendly.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
And Aboah sits down next to him to kind of look at this petition. And then when Marcus gets a better look at Aboah in the light of the lamp, he's like, oh, you look sick as fuck. Do you have a fever?
You know, he really doesn't.
He doesn't really. I assume he's supposed to be, like, sweating and stuff.
Yeah.
Marcus is worried that he is sick, but Aboah denies this. And then Marcus talks to him very reassuringly about how he knows how lonely it can be to immigrate to a strange place. You know, far away from family and everything, but this petition that they're working on today is going to be the first step to becoming a U.S. citizen and eventually being able to bring his family over and getting reconnected to his community. Aboah does not seem to care that much about this.
No.
And there's like an incredibly long pause after Marcus stops talking, and then he's like, thank you.
It's kind of funny.
It is pretty funny. I don't know. I would watch an entire show about these two interacting.
Yes. It could be like, I don't know, roommates, and like Abo is always trying to hide the fact that he's like dragging dead bodies back to the apartment, and it'd be great. It would be great.
It'd be very funny.
Marcus is always trying to get Abo a date or something. I don't know. I would watch it.
It could. There's a story there. Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So we'll touch on that. Maybe we can write a little fan fiction.
Okay. Well, we go back to FBI HQ. We're back with Mulder. Mulder is showing up to Pendrell's office to ask him about something. Pendrell is very disappointed that Scully has not shown up. He's like, well, can't we wait for her? Isn't she going to come? And Mulder's like, nope, sorry. He kind of teases him. And he's like, well, Scully has a date. And then Pendrell, you know, he gets the Charlie Brown music, starts playing. He's head down, shuffles into the office looking very, very sad. But then Mulder's like, just kidding with a dead man. It's an autopsy. And then he like smacks him on the back, and then Pendrell falls over. Right?
I don't know. Basically. Can't believe Mulder's a bully.
A little bit.
It
wasn't malicious.
No. It was sweet.
Yeah.
I think Pendrell probably knows he doesn't have a chance either, right?
No, I don't think so.
He's seen Mulder and Scully together.
Yeah. He's aware, yeah. I think.
He's got a little
crush.
He just
likes to hang out with Scully, and that's fine.
There's nothing wrong
with
that.
Who doesn't like to hang out with Scully?
I like to hang out with Scully. If I worked with Scully, I would have an innocent little work crush on her.
Yeah. So they get down to business. So I guess Mulder gave Pendrell like skin fibers or something.
Yeah.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. Pendrell has done a little analysis on it, and he found some sort of a seed in one of the hair fibers. And he's analyzed it and found out that it's a rare species of passion flower, which is indigenous only to certain parts of West Africa. So they're like, oh, well, how did this seed get halfway around the world? Maybe on a flight.
Yeah, is it indigenous perhaps? To Burkina Faso, perhaps? Maybe?
Could be.
Just spitballing here.
Be.
Mulder later calls Scully to give her the down low on this. It sounds like the plant might be lethal, but it would have to be like way more than just the seed they found in order for it to kill anyone. And besides, the corpse's tox screen was clean. Scully is also just covered in blood. Like, no one ever mentions it. And it's like, I don't know. It's not like
she
a
is.
Thing. But she's got like a bloody handprint on her chest.
She does. Blood splattered everywhere.
It's pretty wild.
This
what happened?
Date with the dead man's getting pretty hot.
I mean, I guess he got to second base at least.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what.
I mean, I'm happy for her.
Yeah. Like, more power to her.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't quite know what the ethics are, but like, I don't know. I guess she's having a good time.
Yeah. I support her.
So that's not addressed at all. It's just some background color.
Yep.
And she tells Mulder that the victim's pituitary gland was necrotized, which is not good because the pituitary gland is pretty important. Mm-hmm. Among other things, it controls the production of melanin. And Scully doesn't know the cause of this issue, so she's like identified, you know, the result, but still doesn't know what this presumably disease or maybe evil poison plant is.
Mm-hmm.
And Mulder's like, cool, I'm on a plane to NYC. I'll catch you on the flip side.
Is it a plane or like a train?
Oh,
like
it might have been a train.
I mean, I don't know.
He's on some sort of public transit to New York City.
Hell yeah. To the United Nations building. We reunite with Marita Covarrubias. Which is a very easy name to remember.
I totally remembered it before you said it even just now.
What was it?
Marita.
Yep.
Covarrubias.
There you go.
Yay.
All right.
Thank you. Got it.
Anyway, so we reunite with her. So she's like going home for the day or something. And then Mulder has shown up to talk to her, but instead of like, I don't know, doing it like a normal person and calling out and saying, hey, he just kind of like follows her like a creep in the shadows for a while to freak her out.
Yeah. And she's like looking behind herself and like clearly alarmed at this tall, evil man following her in the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
Mulder, what the hell?
Maybe he was just like, he's like, listen, I, for years, I've had to deal with Deep Throat and Mr. X sneaking up on me. Now it's my turn.
It's like, I get that, but he's got to think about the context. Exactly. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
One thing if this was just another old dude.
Yes.
I don't know.
I don't think he's really thought about the implications here.
No, yeah. They need to talk through this. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that.
But he eventually reveals himself and she relaxes. She's like, oh, it's you. Okay. She doesn't look too excited to see him, frankly. But he comes up and asks her, he kind of shows her the seed. He asks her if she knows anything about that or the case that they're working on. And she says no. And he says, well, can you find anything out about the case? And she's like, I don't really want to. He kind of asks her, like, where... You know, how could this seed have shown up in the U.S. if it came from halfway around the world? And she kind of talks about, well, you know, lots of things like this happen all the time. Borders are very permeable. I don't know. This isn't enough information for me to figure it out. And she starts walking away. And then Mulder, like, grabs her arm. And he's like, listen, Marita, you made an overture to me. You left an opening. I need to know if there's anything here. Very.
It's literally how he does it. It's like he's defining the relationship. It's absurd.
I mean, are we sure they're still talking about the case? Winky face.
I don't think so. I wrote that he's this is a struggle. You can help me workshop this joke.
Okay.
You know, serial monogamist as a phrase?
Okay, yeah.
I wanted something like, he's a serial informant or something.
Yes.
Because he was like really committed to Deep Throat and then immediately jumped to Mr. X, who he was committed
that's
to.
True.
And I was like immediately jumping again to the next one.
That's true.
Yeah.
I like mono information. No, mono informantist.
Ethereal mono informantist.
Yes.
Hard
yes,
to
yes.
say.
But that's what he is.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we don't find out if she's going to help him or not. But, I mean, he's pretty cute, so she probably will.
Did Mr. X not warn her about this? He was like, he's going to be cute. He's going to do the puppy eyes. You cannot fall for it. Mm-hmm, this is what killed me.
Yeah, exactly.
I assume he left a note for her, and that's why she's not excited to see Mulder.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, good. She should, you know. Look what happened to the last two.
I think she's falling for it, unfortunately.
We cut again. We briefly see, we're at a bus stop. We briefly see the coolest guy in the world on an ad. He's not important, but he's just like a cool dude in like a tourism ad.
Yeah.
Gotta love him. But more importantly, there is a teenager waiting for the bus. It's like the middle of the night. He gets shot with one of those seeds. Mm-hmm. Like it... It's like a, what do you call it?
Blow dart.
Blow dart, yeah. It's like a blow dart and it like smacks into his neck. So that's not good.
No.
That's not what you want to happen when you're waiting for the bus in the middle of the night.
I mean, it happens pretty frequently, but it's not what you want.
No. So everything goes kind of fuzzy and he collapses on the bench like he's being paralyzed. And then too late, his bus does show up. The bus driver stops. He like asks him if he's going to get on and the kid is non-responsive and just kind of staring. And so the driver's like, well, you can walk. And then he leaves.
Well, bus driver.
What a jerk.
Not a great guy.
As he does note, he had a schedule to keep.
It's true, technically.
Which we will return to later.
As you noted, if this kid takes the bus every day, he should know who he is.
Yeah, exactly.
But whatever.
Yeah.
Bus driver does not care.
He's the replacement. I don't know. Or the, what do you call it? He's the substitute for the night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he leaves, which sadly leaves this poor kid alone with Samuel Eboa, who is standing there. And this time, now that we see him, he has even more white on his face. So he's getting hungry.
Mm-hmm.
He needs some melanin.
Crunch, crunch, crunch.
Yep.
Slurp, slurp, slurp. Thank you.
Yeah.
Slurp, slurp, slurp. We get an investigation station. It's at the bus stop the next day. Skelly is interviewing the bus driver, who confirms that the kid at the bus stop looked sick. Mulder arrives and Skelly again gives him kind of the down low about the 17-year-old boy who is now missing. He takes this bus home every day from his shift at the fast food joint nearby, but he never made it home last night. We found his knapsack at the bus stop, so that's how they know he's missing. Scully thinks the kid was maybe like kind of out of it because of this theoretical disease that she thinks is happening. But Mulder's like, or the seed is a drug. And Mulder gives Scully more information about the seeds that he presumably got from Marita after we cut away from them. He shows her this report from the New York Port Authority that was filed with the FAA about Cold Open Man, where he had all of the same symptoms as the corpse that Scully was checking out at the morgueboard.
Yes.
But they hadn't connected those two cases before because I guess information about the Cold Open Man was squashed.
Yes.
And the body was returned to, was it Burkina Faso?
I think so, yep. Before an autopsy could go. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is the information that he's gotten from Marita.
Yeah. So I guess that's not about the seed at all. It's just about this guy.
Yes.
So, still no cause of death was determined for that guy either. Interesting.
So we leave them to investigate. We cut again. We go to, there's a pair of cops that have shown up at Aboa's apartment. They're like surveying a bunch of people. They do knock on the door, and one of the cops is like, Aboa, what kind of a name is that?
I know. Like,
what?
It's so strange. And they make the black cops say it too. And
I know.
It's like, what the hell is this
it's
line?
It's really not, okay, whatever.
It's like an incredibly normal sounding name, mm-hmm. even to like an American's ears, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not hard to pronounce
it was all. It was a weird line. But whatever.
Yeah.
So they knock on the door. Aboa answers. He answers like a little bit. He doesn't open the door all the way. And then we do look inside while he and the cops are chatting. And then we do see the bus stop kid sitting there paralyzed, not looking too great. Looking a little freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
Understandably. But Aboa, he listens to what the cops have to say, and then they leave, and then he walks back in, and then he like unhinges his jaw and then pulls some sort of a, what are we calling this? A bone pipe.
Yeah.
Like a bone pipe from his throat.
Yeah. But it's like,
you know, a bone pipe.
Yeah. That's pretty common. We all have one in our throat. You can remove it if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what, 12 inches long?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I mean, it's big.
Yeah.
Not something that I would keep in my throat, personally.
Well, you wish that you didn't have to, but I think you can agree with me that you have a bone pipe in your throat right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit.
Wait, is that why he doesn't talk a lot? Because he has this giant thing in his throat?
I hadn't really thought about that before, but that would make sense.
Does he really say, he says like, yes, mm-hmm. or thank. He says like one word responses.
Yeah, I don't.
But that's like pretty much it, right?
I don't remember if he ever says a full sentence or not.
I don't know. I don't think he does.
Okay, probably because he's got a giant bone pipe in his throat.
Makes it hard to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So that's scary and probably not good for this poor kid.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Pour one out.
Yes.
Back at the. No, we haven't been there yet, so it's not really bad.
For the first time.
For the first time, we head to the INS office, where the Boo crew are interviewing Marcus. What was his last name again?
Duff,
thank you.
How could you forget?
Marcus Duff. I just called him Marcus because we were tight, because of how cool he is.
Of course, yeah.
So they're interviewing.
He would definitely ask you to call him Marcus.
Yeah, he'd be like, please, Mr. Duff was my father.
Yeah.
Call me Marcus. But not Mark. If you tried to call him Mark, he would be pissed off.
He's not a Mark. He's a Marcus.
No. Mm-hmm. So the Boo crew want him to cross-reference this plane manifesto from the charter plane at the beginning of the episode with recent immigrants seeking citizenship. And Marcus is like, I'm not doing that. ACAB. And he's like, you know, I'm not going to help you find people who are in the country illegally. That is not what I do. I'm trying to actually help them and your cops. And Scully's like, we also don't care about that. We're investigating a potential public health crisis. And then Marcus starts listening. He's like, okay. I do remember seeing some guy who looked very sick recently.
Yes. So then Mulder and Scully go to Aboa's apartment. Mulder is coming out of it. He's like not home. And they get into the car and they start chatting a little bit. Mulder is still confused because there doesn't really seem to be a motive for all these killings. And Scully's like, well, of course there isn't, because it's a pathogen and pathogens don't have motives. Fair enough. But then Mulder does kind of look over and he does catch sight of a boa who's, I don't know, walking home or whatever. So then they go running after him. They run after him is the order of events there. They give chase into an alleyway with a capital A.
This is
an alleyway.
This looks like the set of a play that takes place in an alley.
It's like a
stereotypical looking alley.
Mm-hmm. There's trash everywhere. There's like a burned out car. It's
like
all
a shopping
happening.
Cart.
Shopping carts. Yeah. It's very exciting. But they chase him into this alleyway and then he disappears. So they're like, oh my God, where did he go? There's not really a lot of places for him to go. So it's very mysterious. Mm-hmm. We get some more pan flute music now.
Love it.
Search. I don't think we're emphasizing enough how much pan flute there is.
So much.
It's a lot.
It only gets worse because later on there's like screaming added to it where it's like in the background.
But anyway, so they're looking through the alleyway. They don't find him. They think that they lost him because Scully finds like a hole in the fence. But then Mulder looks to the side and he sees like an evil little hole in the wall. And then a boa is in there like sleeping like a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of creepy. Like upside down.
Upside down like a tiny little drain pipe that a human man should not be able to fit in.
Yeah.
Spooky.
Weird.
Almost like he's squeezed into a small space.
Oh.
And needs to eat food to make up for a missing gland.
Oh.
Have we heard that one before or is this new?
At least twice.
Okay. That's what I thought in better episodes or
Anyway.
So that's weird. So they bring a boa to Mount Zion Medical Center and start doing some tests on him. He does not have any symptoms particularly, but Scully is very eager to keep testing him. And is this CDC doctor or is this someone else?
I think it is, but I really don't know.
He was. I cannot emphasize how much of a non-entity the CDC doctor
was. I think it probably was.
Okay. So Dr. CDC makes a comment about how it would be helpful if they could talk to a boa. So I think they think they need an interpreter, but I guess he just isn't talking because he doesn't want to talk to them and has a bone pipe in his throat.
Yes.
Because he speaks English. So that's kind of funny. I guess he's just refusing to talk to them.
Well, he's like unconscious, isn't he?
I don't know. I think he was conscious.
Oh.
I could be wrong.
Oh, okay. It seemed to me like he was like totally unresponsive.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know if that's true.
I'd have to rewatch and I'm never going to. So she goes into the hallway to talk to Mulder and then our man Marcus arrives and he's like, literally, why is this person being arrested? You said that wasn't going to happen. And he's not happy. But we learn that they called Marcus in to serve as a translator. And I don't know, whatever. Why would they even know that Marcus speaks the same language as this guy? And I guess they do because they all speak English.
Well, yeah. I mean, he would be a good person to contact because he didn't, he would know how to get a translator.
True. I suppose he would need to know anyway since he's like working with him.
I feel like he's a good person to contact.
I guess I would always call Marcus anyway.
Yeah, just given whatever you need.
The lightest excuse, I would call Marcus, so I get that. So the Boo crew want him to ask a boa about the missing boys, and they reassure Marcus that there aren't any criminal charges that they're filing against Samuel. They just want to know why he ran. And then Marcus is like, are you kidding me? Like, if you had ever been beaten by the cops, you wouldn't have to ask such a dumbass question. And then Mulder's all mad because he's like, no, he ran because he's hiding something. And then Mulder just like leaves. And he's like, I'm going to find out who plotted to deceive, inveigle, and obfuscate. And he also struggles with the line.
This is the third time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even that good a line.
No,
frankly,
it's horrible.
And it's not. Why would they be saying this? Why would Mulder and Scully be saying these words
like
over and over again?
It feels like a bizarro version of Scully, where they just want to make her sound, you know, sort of smart and Vulcan-like.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously Mulder's like making fun of her for that. which is why he's saying it. But like, why is it such a thing?
Howie was really happy with this line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And he shouldn't be.
I think I assumed that it was like an in-joke with the crew, but I guess it probably isn't if he didn't find anything.
I don't think so.
So it's just embarrassing.
Yep.
Ugh.
I just want... We'll talk about that later. All right. we'll come back to this line.
So, yeah. So Mulder's off to do some more searching because he does not think that this is just a pathogen.
So we go to the Burkina Faso embassy in Washington, D.C. It's late at night. Mulder is being let into the... He's an ambassador?
He's like a minister. He's under an ambassador.
Okay, so he's just some sort of a diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
So he's being let into a diplomat's office, and we find out that somebody from the United Nations got this meeting to happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm,
somebody blonde.
And pretty.
Perhaps, maybe.
I want to know how they defined their relationship.
Yeah, we did not get closure on that.
Mm-mm. Hmm.
So Mulder is... So he asks this diplomat guy, what's his name?
I just called him the minister.
All right. So he asks the minister about the flight, the cold open flight, and what he knows about it. Because the order to stop the investigation on the body came directly from him. And so the minister is like, well, I don't know. Even if I told you, you wouldn't believe me. And Mulder, those words are catnip for him. He's like, oh boy. He starts rubbing his hands together. He sits down. He takes his popcorn out. He's like, tell me. So the minister launches into his exciting, prepared speech mm-hmm. that he has. So he's like, well, back when I was growing up in Burkina Faso, we heard all these old stories about the teleco, which is a spirit of the air. And so there is some sort of a creature that rests by day in dark places and in homes under the ground. Sounds a little familiar. But at night, they would come out. And when he was 7 years old, he woke up in the middle of the night. He saw a pale creature staring down at him from his bed. Not what you want to see in the middle of the night. Kind of scary. And then he was swept up into the air, presumably by the creature. But when he opened his eyes, he just saw his father holding him. And so he thought it was just a nightmare. Nothing to worry about. Until the next day, when they found his cousin dead. And he was pale as death. So that's why when the report about the flight came across his desk, he saw the photo. He remembered what happened to him as a kid. He's like, we gotta cover this up. We can't let this see the light of day.
This is a teleco attack if I've ever seen one.
Mm-hmm. And he did.
Mm, yeah. Oh, yeah.
At least one.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And now two.
Mm-hmm.
As he's giving this speech, we see he continues in voiceover and we see the hospital where a boa is, and an orderly or a doctor or someone is rolling a cart into a boa's quarantine room. And when a boa doesn't answer, we kind of realize with some camera work that he is clearly holed up in the cart somewhere, escaping from the quarantine room. Like he has sneaked into a drawer or a tiny opening in the cart.
Yes.
And when the orderly takes the cart from the quarantine room just out into the open,
mm-hmm.
a boa is going to get out.
Yep.
That's also not probably how you want to handle quarantine, but that's a different issue.
But that's pretty typical.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, on the positive side, I thought this was a creepy shot mm-hmm. of him, of a boa, like, sneaking out of the drawer. Because you just see, like, his eyes, and then the drawer just, like, pops open. It was a creepy shot.
It was
good. Give him that much.
Yeah.
But he's out. He's breached containment. So that's not good.
No.
So we cut back to Scully. She is, again with Dr. CDC, I think.
I think so. Or, you know, basically the same character, if not him.
Yeah. And so she has some x-rays of Aboa's throat showing the, what do we call it?
Bone
The bone
tube.
Bone pipe. I don't like bone tube.
I kind of like bone tube. It's horrible.
Ugh. So the bone tube pipe. So they're like, That's weird. What is this? They're wondering if it's like something foreign lodged in his esophagus or like some kind of a bone growth or something like that. But they don't really know. They also took an MRI of his brain and they see something very weird. He does not have a pituitary gland. Hmm. So that's not possible. Seemingly, he can't survive without it.
Yeah.
But then Mulder shows up right at this time and says, guys, Abo is gone. So that's not good. We see our main man, Marcus, walking to his car in the middle of the night. No.
He better not die.
I'll be very upset. But unfortunately, Aboa shows up just then. He's looking even more pale, so it's not good. Even though he just killed somebody, he just killed the bust up kid, so he should be fine.
Yeah. He must have to eat a lot. This is sort of like the, what was it? When did that happen? Was that in
Too Shy
and Quagmire, where it's like things suddenly start eating lots and lots of things once the Boo crew arrive.
Yes.
Yep, suspicious.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it would be boring if only one person died.
I know. It's how it works.
Yeah.
But it is funny.
Yep. But anyway, so he's showing up. He needs some goo. He needs it soon. He freaks poor Marcus out, but then Marcus is like, oh, you scared me, but it's okay. We're best friends. I'll give you a ride home. It's fine. Abo is very blank and kind of freaky. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't give this guy a ride home.
But Marcus is the coolest, nicest guy around.
He definitely is. He's too nice for his own good.
Yeah.
And then we do scarily see that Aboa has the bone pipe behind his back. Uh-oh.
Ready to kill Marcus.
Mm-hmm. So back at the hospital, they have found the cart that Aboa escaped in. Mulder is very upset that he didn't eat his Jell-O.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
he noted that. He was very upset about it. Mm-hmm. Definitely his worst crime.
Yeah.
Except I'm kind of on his side because Jell-O is disgusting.
It is. Granted.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. But they did. so they found that. And then they also get a call that they have found Marcus's car, sans Marcus, with the ignition still hot. Oh, my God. They got to get him.
My guy.
We cut back to Aboa, who has Marcus on the ground. He is paralyzed. He's sticking that bone spur like right up his nose.
Mm-hmm.
Right up his nose.
It's not okay.
That's not what I want to see.
No.
Or happen to me.
Or Marcus.
Marcus doesn't look too happy about it, frankly.
No.
Even he has his limits.
Yes.
Yep. And his limit is sticking things up his nose.
Yeah, being paralyzed and having something stuck up his nose against his will.
Exactly. But thankfully, everybody relax, everybody breathe, because he is interrupted by the cops showing up and they do like chase him off before Marcus can get killed. So,
So Marcus is okay. They call for an ambulance and everything.
Hallelujah.
So the Boo crew and local PD are on the scene in an investigation station while the EMS load Marcus into the ambulance. The cops are still looking for Aboa, and Mulder and Scully get in their car and continue discussing the case. Mulder thinks that he's like, well, this kind of reminds me of Squeeze. Remember that episode that we were in? Maybe it's like a physical need, and Samuel has to feed because he has no pituitary gland, so he has to get that juice from somewhere else. And they start kind of driving somewhere. Mulder says, do you notice how he, like, isn't albino and is also still alive, even though he doesn't have a pituitary gland? Seems suspect. So Mulder thinks it's evolutionary and that he is from this, like, secret African tribe of albinos based on the folktale that the minister told him.
Yep.
And Scully is not impressed, but Mulder is like, you know, we always take the things that we don't understand and turn them into stories in terms that are most familiar to us, whether that's folklore, like the minister said, a disease, like Scully thinks, or a conspiracy, like Mulder thinks. But why did Aboa come here? Why didn't he just stay in Burkina Faso? Mulder does not know. But he's like, I don't know, maybe like the same reason all immigrants do. I was like, okay.
All right.
Whatever. Doesn't seem like it would make that much sense to go to a like largely white country if you needed a bunch of melanin, but
yes.
Whatever. So Mulder stops the car.
Why is he here?
I don't know. I don't think there is a reason ever given, right?
All
right. Other maybe than America.
It was getting too hot back, you know. That's true. Maybe they were on to him, and so he had to lay low.
Maybe. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So Mulder stops the car at a construction site where they are removing asbestos from the building, and Pendrell had earlier found asbestos fibers on the victim's clothing. So Mulder's like, maybe this was a relevant place.
So this is the only place with asbestos in the whole city.
Yeah, it's the only place under construction.
This is very convenient.
It is
that they just like come across it. They're like, look, it's 35 minutes into the episode. It's time.
Maybe because they said that the victim that Scully was doing the autopsy on was found by a construction site. So maybe Mulder was just like,
was it this one?
I don't know. That's a good question. Okay. I was just trying to vaguely justify it. But then it wouldn't make any sense that they hadn't checked it out beforehand. So I don't know.
Well, maybe they did and he just like wasn't there at the time.
Maybe.
And now he's come back.
Okay. Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, anyway, they find him because it's 35 minutes into the episode.
Yep.
They
go inside right into the asbestos.
Just breathing it in, mesothelioma style.
Yo. So they go in there looking for him. It's a very abandoned, creepy little place. Mulder gets blow darted in the neck. Uh-oh, that's not good. He collapses, but he does manage to shout for Scully before he gets paralyzed. So she goes out and tries to find him, but he's like disappeared. So Scully goes crawling into an air duct, even though I'm very proud of her that she's gotten over her fan-related trauma from Ghost in the Machine. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a couple of years, so she's had time to heal, to grow, to learn. She goes right back into that air duct, and I'm very proud of her.
She's a brave woman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I would not be getting into an air duct. I would say, Mulder, you're on your own.
And then he would die,
mm-hmm.
and he'd be like, well, at least I didn't have to get into an air duct.
Sometimes it's worth it.
Yeah. So,
and sometimes other people's lives are worth you not having to get into an air duct and shoot another fan.
Maybe this is why Scully is like an FBI agent.
What? You don't think I would be a good FBI agent?
You've just admitted that you would not crawl into an air duct to rescue your partner. So
I guess if they were as cute as Mulder, maybe I would.
That is a very important factor.
Yeah. I mean, would she do this if it were like Carl from accounting?
I don't think so.
I mean, she would because she's perfect.
Well,
but I wouldn't.
Okay. Yeah. So she goes crawling in through air ducts. She's got her flashlight. She does find the body of the bus stop kid. She really doesn't react to that.
No.
She's just moving on. She's like, I don't care. I'm looking for Mulder. Then she does find Mulder. He is totally paralyzed. Can't move. Can't talk. Can't do anything. A boa comes like scrambling through the air ducts. Like, this is also a pretty freaky moment. He like shows up in her flashlight beam and she like freaks out and like shoots at him, but he gets away. She misses.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of freaky.
It was, yeah.
So then Scully, like she like kicks out the other end of the air duct or something and like heaves Mulder onto the ground. I was really hoping for a fireman carry. We did not get it.
No.
Sadly, she just kind of like throws him on the ground like a sack of potatoes.
Basically, yeah. It's like, come on, Scully. I know that you work out and it's explicitly so you can lift Mulder. Let's just do it.
Exactly.
Let's not pretend.
Mm-hmm. He would love that.
He would be so into it.
Yes, yes, yes. But sadly, she's on the job, so we don't have time for that. So she heaves him onto the ground. There are a couple of other dead bodies lying around. So this is his whatever.
Not a very active construction site, apparently.
No. No, it doesn't look like it. But she calls for backup, and while she is on the phone, we kind of see a boa creeping up behind her, but she doesn't notice. And Mulder's on the ground. He sees it, but he can't move or talk, so he kind of like tries to motion with his eyes and signal to her. They're simpatico, so she does notice at the very last second. She turns around, she shoots a boa. Day saved.
Nice.
They made it.
Amazing. We cut to Scully doing her report in her anime glasses. We learn that Marcus Duff survived, which is the most important information. Aboa also survived, but he's being charged with murder and is super sick, and hormone therapy has not been helping him. So I guess he does have to like eat people's pituitary glands with his straw to survive, and they can't just replace the hormones in another way. And Scully is like, one day, science is going to totally explain what happened here. I believe that. Mm-hmm. But science might not ever be able to explain our fear of the unknown, which causes us to, once again, deceive, inveigle, and obfuscate. What does that even mean
for
in this context?
For the love of God.
What does that even mean in
it
this
doesn't,
context?
It really doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Who obfuscated anything?
No one.
Who inveigled?
No one.
Who deceived? He's
no
just
one.
Like a little squeeze boy.
Yes. It doesn't have anything to do with the episode
no.
or the theme of the episode.
Howard.
He just opened a dictionary. He was very excited about it. He's like, I'm sticking this in and you are going to leave it in.
Four times we had to hear this.
Four times. I don't know. Why did they make it the motto of the episode?
I don't know. Do you think maybe they were making fun of Howie? They were like, okay, if you're going to insist on having this three times in the episode, we're going to add it to the credits.
That would be
to embarrass
so
you.
Funny. I hope so.
Yeah.
He deserves it.
Wait, but what if he didn't know they were making fun of him? Now it's kind of circling around and being sad.
I mean.
Were they bullies?
Wet kitten Howie. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Do you think Vince Gilligan is a bully?
I don't know. Maybe?
I feel like he could be. I hope he's not.
I feel like he leans.
But
like,
he might be.
Maybe. All right. Shall we move on?
Let us move on.
Let's move on to who? The crew. So, Howard Gordon, mm-hmm. our favorite man.
The writing is sterling, and I say that because I think, you know, I don't do... in fact, I feel like the worst guy in the room often. We have an amazing writing staff.
So he was originally working on an episode about someone who appeared to be immortal. So that was like, he just wanted to write an episode about somebody who is immortal.
Okay.
But then after discussions with consulting producer Ken Horton, he added in the notion of the melanin-sucking albino vampire. So that idea came from Ken Horton, I guess.
Okay.
And then, just wait. And then Chris Carter approved the storyline, but then the first draft of the script was met with disapproval by the writing staff. Mm. So the story was totally restructured and rewritten. The writing staff did all of that.
Uh-huh.
And then as the episode went into pre-production, Chris Carter asked Howard Gordon to refine the script to give it more of a purpose. And so then that was when he came up with the idea with the theme
mm-hmm.
of deceive, inveigle, and obfuscate. Was it a theme?
Where in the episode was that a theme?
I don't know.
Like, I guess they hid it. I guess the minister hid the one body.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I guess. I don't know. Chris was like, this has to be about something. You gotta get that dictionary out.
Chris told him it had to be about something and how he still couldn't come up with an idea of what it could be about.
Oh, just wait. There's
it
more.
Gets worse.
There's more.
Okay.
There's more. So then Chris Carter was also the one. He came up with the idea of a bow is the bone pipe thing.
Okay.
And the pituitary gland, all that stuff. That was Chris Carter's idea.
Okay.
John Chabon.
Thank you.
John Chabon, our favorite man. I don't know if he is.
He's got
our
a
favorite
good name.
Yeah, for sure. So John Chabon was the one who suggested that the teleco came from Burkina Faso. So it sounds like every single element of this episode was suggested by somebody else.
Yeah, did Howie write any of it?
Did he do?
He just knew that
just
he wanted
like
something that
else
at night.
Yep. Yep.
That's kind of embarrassing.
It kind
Everybody
of is.
Everybody's helping this man so much.
I know.
How
it
does
feel like
job?
In every single Howie episode, it's like, and then X person helped him rewrite the entire story.
Yeah. You know? I don't think he should be in this profession.
I don't know. It's kind of sad.
Yikes.
So, I mean, that is kind of every element of the episode, isn't it?
Yeah. That it's melanin sucking, the pituitary gland, the bone pipe, Burkina Faso.
Yep.
It's not looking good.
Not looking good for
Howie. Well, Howie came up with deceive, inveigle, obfuscate.
After Chris Carter made him.
Yeah.
After he was Chris forced. Carter threw a dictionary at him, he's like, put some smart words in there.
I would pay money to read that first script mm-hmm. and see how bad that was.
Yeah. well.
What if it was really good? What if everyone keeps messing with how he's writing because he's just like a pushover? But he like keeps coming with really good ideas and then they ruin it.
Maybe. It's possible. Who knows?
It's unlikely, but it's possible.
Yeah. We'll see. One day, I guess.
That probably explains why his episodes are kind of bad too, because they're like written by committee, sort of.
It sounds like it. I don't know. So, yeah. Oh, Howie.
He's trying.
He is trying. He does sound like he's trying, at the very least. So the teleco is pretty much what they, it's like a real thing, pretty much how they said it in the episode. It's a spirit of the air in Bambara, which is an ethnic group in West Africa, including Burkina Faso. So it's like, yeah, it's a spirit of the air who is sometimes thought to be an albino. So pretty much how it was in the episode. So the Aboa, the actor, Willie Amakye, he was apparently an Olympic runner for Ghana.
Wow.
Which he had just like come back from the Olympics.
That's why he could outrun Mulder.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like such a weird career trajectory going from I'm an Olympic athlete and now I'm acting on The X-Files.
Huh. I guess it's the Jesse Ventura career trajectory, sort of.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, an equivalent sort of weirdness.
Something like that. I don't know. And then they, the airplane set was actually constructed for a later episode this season. But they used it for this episode too.
Spoilers, there's another airplane?
There's another airplane later in the show.
They're never on airplanes. What am I supposed to do with this?
I don't know.
They're on airplanes all the time.
Are they?
Well, I guess we don't see them on airplanes that much. They just are flying around.
Off screen, they're on airplanes. Yeah.
That's a good point. There was one in the pilot, right? Was that the last time we saw the Boo crew on an airplane?
I can't really think of much, so maybe.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird. Okay.
But they're going to make up for it later this season.
Nice. I am so ready.
Oh, yeah. That's all I got.
All right. Well, shall we move on to Blazer Watch, the segment where we talk about the fashion in this episode?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Scully has a terrible pantsuit at the beginning of the episode. The one where she walks, like, in the first scene.
Oh, yeah, when she walks into Skinner's
office.
It's,
like, white. It's, like, way too long. Like, the skirt, it's, like, I don't know. It, like, goes all the way down to her ankles, and, like, the top, like, also goes down to, like, the mid-thigh. It's not good.
Like, too big?
Yeah, it's too big. It's, like, yeah. Meant for a taller person, I think.
I thought we had fixed this.
I know.
They're looking so good in previous episodes.
We're backsliding.
Was this filmed before the other ones?
Maybe. Who knows?
Goodness.
Probably not, but.
Probably not. Cold Open Boy had some goofy looking gold oval glasses where like the nose of them were pointed up in a triangle kind of thing, like the nose bridge. And it looks kind of uncomfortable and very silly. And they were just like a bad shape for his face.
Those. Yeah.
But it's kind of funny.
Scully had a cute little like medical hat that had a hair window for some reason. I don't know why she was the only one wearing it, or I think what the nurse later wore it.
Yeah,
but yeah,
maybe she had to show off her hair. It like sort of, although not quite, looked like one of the Krispy Kreme hats.
Yes, it did,
which was very funny. Maybe she like had just come from a Krispy Kreme and was excited to watch the donut making process, and they saw that she was so pumped that they gave her one of the little hats like they give to kids. And she just wore that to the autopsy because she was so pumped about it.
That sounds right.
Yeah,
I think that's definitely what happened.
Have you ever been to a Krispy Kreme?
Yes.
Okay.
I remember when there isn't one here now, but there was briefly one, and I remember when it opened and we went, and there was like there were like cars for five blocks to get into this Krispy Kreme.
It's very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the story is about why Minnesota doesn't have a Krispy Kreme now, but it was strange to learn that when I moved here.
Yeah, we did have one.
Okay, that's so sad.
I don't know why it went away.
You're not. I mean, they're fine.
Yeah, I mean, you can get good donuts elsewhere.
Exactly. So you don't really need them. We live very close to a very good donut shop. So.
Yes.
Anyway, that's all I had. Do you have any more Blazer Watch?
Marcus was wearing a windbreaker at one point that didn't, it wasn't his, it just didn't seem right for him. Mm-hmm. It like wasn't cool enough for this man. Or maybe that's appropriate because like he doesn't, you know, he has so many people to help. He doesn't have time to think about fashion.
Yeah, he doesn't care about that kind of stuff. He cares about his clients.
And that's why he can use a boa. Because, you know, a boa is probably a fashion icon, right?
Probably.
I don't know.
Oh, my
gosh. He could be.
This would be perfect. This is a great show idea.
I really like the show idea.
And then Marcus talks a lot, obviously. He's the chatty one.
Yep.
And a boa just says yes, no, maybe, and thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's like his, what do they call it on a sitcom? His, like, catchphrase,
yep.
Mm-hmm. It's just yes, no, thank you.
Exactly. I'm thinking, did you ever watch New Girl?
I did some episodes. Okay. I think I only saw the first couple seasons, though.
I'm just thinking like a New Girl-esque show, but with these guys.
Yeah. Wait, who would fill out the penthouse? Who would be the other people? Or not penthouse, but you know, house.
Who penthouse? I don't know. Well, Ellen. Ellen Bledsoe has to be there, of course. I don't know.
Do you remember that one guy from Blood who walked past the bus stop?
Yes, yeah. Of course I do. That guy? He can be there. That's like four people, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. And one girl, that's the classic sitcom thing.
Of course.
Three guys and one girl.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Feels about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to develop this pilot, and I think we could probably get picked up, right? Because everyone else cares about Bus Stop Man from Blood, Ellen Bledsoe. Marcus and Aboa.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Everyone who's listening to this definitely remembers all of these people.
That's true.
Clearly.
They better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because we talked about them a lot.
We talked about Ellen a lot.
Yeah, that's true. I guess we haven't mentioned Bus Stop Guy in a while, who is different from the Bus Stop Guy who got murdered in this episode.
Yes. Not this. Yes. Yeah, this Blood is... Bus Stop Guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, shall we move on to FBI Do?
Yes.
The segment where we analyze the development of the romantic, or however you want to define it, relationship between the Boo crew. And we do this on a doomsday clock scale where 10 minutes to midnight is far from love. And 0 minutes to midnight is right in the blast zone of love. And we like to give examples from the episode to explain what that scale actually means. So who would we say is 10 minutes to midnight in this episode, which is far from love?
Aboa and his pituitary gland.
Doesn't even have it. That's how much he hates it.
Exactly.
That's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus and cops.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That checks out.
Mm-hmm. All right. Who would we say is 0 minutes to midnight?
Well, as we've discovered, of course, Marcus and Aboa. Mm-hmm. Maybe not romantically, just like as roommates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's going to be like a fun 90s sitcom theme song about them. Mm-hmm. And I want to hear it.
Wait, can Reggie be part of this? Because he has a theme song.
Reggie can be part of this.
I miss Reggie.
Is it
Reggie?
What does it mean that we have identified like basically the only characters of color that have ever been on the show to be all in this penthouse?
That's true. Because they're the coolest side characters,
I guess.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. We might have to unpack that later.
Yeah.
But all right. It all felt right as we were saying it.
It did, yeah.
I put me and Marcus because I love him.
Definitely. Also Scully and that dead body.
Oh,
we can't forget about that.
We were explicitly on a date. That's true.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
All right. Well, where would we put the Boo crew on the scale? On the
Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin.
Yep.
In place of them, do we have to track Mulder and Marita?
I get. Yeah. Is she the new love triangle situation?
Well, I feel like we've kind of missed out on this earlier, but I feel like we should have had a Mulder and his secret informant scale as well.
That's,
you know,
true.
Tracking their relationship. Mulder and Mr. X always out of 10.
100%,
always, yeah. Always, always.
Did not like each other very much.
Mulder and Deep Throat were like out of 3 most of the time, right?
Yeah, they were pretty close.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't see the DTR conversation, the define the relationship conversation. So we don't know what Marita said, but she obviously gave him the information and got him a meeting with this minister. So I guess she's melting a little bit.
Okay. So there's
6, 8.
We're not at a 6, but
yeah.
8.
Okay.
All right. We'll track that later.
Interesting. Hmm. They wrote that scene kind of weird.
Yeah, they did.
Just, yep. Well, sorry. Howie wrote that scene kind of weird.
Yes, yes, yes.
I guess that shouldn't be a surprise. I don't think they would have written it that way if Marita was a man.
No.
So
that they would not.
That doesn't make me that happy.
Yeah. But
anyway. All right. Wait. Oh, my God. Do I hear something vroom, in the distance?
Vroom, 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 vroom.
Vroom, 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 vroom.
That's like an electric car that just goes vroom, vroom.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's a monster truck.
It's coming right at us.
It's Saturday night, and it's all right for fighting because it's Monster of the Week.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Who is the monster of this week?
Xenophobia.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's great.
I don't know.
Or Howie's writing. All right. Cool.
Next. That's it, I guess.
That's all. I don't know. Do we have more to say?
No.
Yeah. What was your favorite scene or moment from this episode?
I did kind of like at the end, just Mulder signaling Scully. I don't know.
Mm.
Just that moment was fun. And I don't know. I kind of like the scene with Pendril. I like Pendril. He's just like a little dork.
He's a little sweetie
pie. I like whenever he shows up.
Same. And he's good at his job. Gosh, dang it.
He is.
Hmm. I wrote any scene with Marcus because I was a big fan of him.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, that goes without saying. Yeah.
He's just great. I don't know. He's like clearly also very good at his job because he's very personable and kind and looking out for the people that he's working with.
Mm-hmm.
And he deserves the world. And I love him.
He's a cool dude.
And he's got like a very good face. Just very intense.
Oh, so intense.
Yeah,
it's like his face is so intense, but his personality is so expansive.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you won't expect it.
Exactly. Oh. It takes you off guard, but in a really good way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Now we come to the end of the episode where it is finally time to rate the story. All right, we do this on a scale of...
A doomsday clock scale.
No, an alien head emoji scale. We've got a lot of scales.
We have two scales.
We have so many scales. What if we swapped them for a bizarro episode?
I think we need to scale our scales. Okay. We rate our scales.
Yeah. Okay, so from the scale of doomsday clock scale to alien head emoji scale, mm-hmm. where do you think that a star-based scale would fall?
Definitely... on the emoji head side?
Yeah, I was going to say that too. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Hmm. I don't even know what I'm saying, frankly.
No, it makes sense. That's what I was going to say.
Okay, okay.
But no, this is the part where we rate the entire episode and we do it on a scale from 0 to 5 alien head emojis. What are we going to give Teleco?
Is it too low?
I gave it a 1.5.
Oh, okay, okay.
So, I don't know.
I was like, either like a 2 or a 2.5.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't really. I'll stick, 2. 2 feels right. Yeah, not very good. It's like squeeze
mm-hmm.
and too shy,
mm-hmm.
but not as good. Were there others in that vein of like creatures stealing hormones to stay alive?
I mean, I guess it's not quite the same thing, but I feel like the worm was kind of the idea of like a divergent evolution kind of thing that it's not evil. It's just a monster that has come to exist.
Yeah. Another better episode.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'm only thinking of better episodes.
Yeah. So yeah, they've done it before. They've done it better.
Mm-hmm.
This one was not very good. Mm-hmm. And we got the deceive, inveigle, obfuscate line 4 times for mm-hmm. some ungodly reason.
It was infuriating.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We also got the pan flute music.
Oh, yep.
Which mm-hmm. is troublesome. Again, it's like, you know, probably, yeah, I'm sure other people have written more about this, but it felt strange. It feels strange every time they have like a people of color episode. Where they're like, now we're going to have black people. Like,
yeah.
They're not in our normal episodes, but we're going to have them all in this episode.
Yeah.
And the monster is going to be related to the fact that they're black specifically. Like, mm-hmm. they're not just going to be characters. It's going to be, like, relevant that they're black. Which, like, could be fine, again, if it wasn't...
If there are more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it, like, wasn't something that only happened sometimes and with, like, the worst episodes that they have.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I felt like that was also not great. And honestly, it's maybe not fair to this episode because I think I was just realizing that, you know, it's a 0 to 5 scale.
Mm-hmm.
And we're basing it off of the X-Files, you know, we're like judging it toward other X-Files episodes. So like the worst X-Files episode should probably be a 0 on our scale, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I should stop giving episodes that I don't like very much like 2.5s because that doesn't really make sense.
Versus what?
Versus
you're saying you should give it a lower score?
Yeah. Oh. I feel like I was trending too high because it's like, I think I was being like, well, it's like, fine. Like, I've seen worse TV, so mm-hmm. I'm going to give it a 2.5 or whatever. But if the scale is just supposed to be X-Files episodes, then it's like the best X-Files episode should be a 5 on our mm-hmm. scale, and the worst one should be a 0.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I was sort of course correcting.
All right.
So maybe it's not Teleco's fault.
Yeah.
There might be more stuff going on. I don't know.
All right. Fair enough.
Hmm.
Well, that's Teleco.
Yeah, that was fine.
Yeah, it was an episode.
It happened. We knew it was a Howie episode.
Yeah. It was evident, self-evident. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's exciting. But next week, hopefully, it will be more exciting because mm-hmm. we will be moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, we will be talking about season 4, episode 4, Un Ruhe.
Nice.
I think is how it's pronounced.
Sounds German?
I don't... Oh, it could be.
I don't know.
I don't remember... Yeah. I guess my recollection is it's just like a... What do you call it? Mm-hmm. Not a palindrome, but the letters are all scrambled. What's the word for that?
Is that an anagram?
Anagram.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what... I think it's an anagram for something in
Palm.
The episode.
Palm. Lamp.
Palm, exactly. I can't remember. We'll find out next week.
Hruuni.
Yeah. I do remember this episode. I just don't remember where the title comes from.
Hruunu.
Ehurnur.
Uhuru.
Whatever. Uhura. Yeah. From Star Trek.
Oh, there you go.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's actually a backdoor pilot for Star Trek. 20 years after Star Trek came out.
That's kind of strange that they did that. So did yep. they like splice in scenes from Star Trek episodes that had already aired as if that was a backdoor pilot?
Well, no, they filmed like a pilot of a show with Uhura.
Okay.
But 20 years after she was already on TV.
I feel like we're probably about 10 years away from the Uhura.
No.
Like,
oh yeah,
whatever
sure.
you call it.
Origin story.
Revival origin story thing. Yep. So, mm-hmm. Well, they probably will never do that. They'll probably, like, do, I don't know, other white male characters before they get to her. But,
well,
I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know.
We'll see.
We'll find out.
They just love making remakes of stuff.
Sure do.
That already exists.
Sure do.
Anyway, next, we already talked about that. If you would like to send us an email, you can do so at skellynationpod@gmail.com. And you are also welcome and encouraged to follow us on Twitter and Instagram, both of those at skellynationpod. If you liked our intro and outro music, you can get more of that on Bandcamp from Groovemaster Putz.
Also, if you're enjoying the show, please consider giving us a rating and a review on your podcatcher of choice. And tell your friends, your family, and the very cool roommates you have. I don't know, what are they doing? What's their
road tripping to the Grand Canyon?
Okay.
I don't know. That's not that cool. I mean, it's cool, but it's not like stereotypically cool.
Right. Well, they could do that. Okay. I mean, he's new to the country. He wants to see the sights.
Road tripping to Lollapalooza.
Yes.
Okay.
That's it. You got it.
Okay.
Well, I feel like the bus stop guy from Blood, like mm-hmm. he definitely has an in
yeah.
at Lollapalooza.
He's got VIP tickets. He's got the tickets.
Yes. For
nice.
Sure.
Nice.
Cool.
All right. Well, I have been your host, Amanda.
And I've been Ella. And remember, trust no one except for us.
But you should deceive, inveigle, and obfuscate.
Any chance you can.
Oh, yeah.
At least 4 times an episode.
Yes.
Yep.
See you later.